Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University. This is Writer's Talk. I'm Doug Dangler. Tom Crowell is from Columbiana, Ohio, and he's the author of Murder of a Journalist, The True Story of the Death of Donald Ring Millett. Dr. Crowell is a veterinarian and amateur social historian. He has published several articles in Timeline, History Magazine, and Man at Arms. Welcome to Writer's Talk today.
My pleasure.
Great. Well, you're here today as part of a bonanza of booksellers and artists from Ohio, and they're right outside the walls of the studio in the State House. So tell me about coming down here and talking about Murder of a Journalist, or how did you first get interested in the Murder of a Journalist story?
Well, actually, I had been doing the freelance magazine articles, which you listed there, and I'd gotten to the point where I thought I'd like to try a book. Mm-hmm. So I spent a couple of years looking for an appropriate story, one that hadn't already been done, one that could be book length and so forth. And I was reading another article, and I had never heard of Don Millett, and his name in the story was mentioned there. I did a little research. I found that it was a very fascinating story about an interesting and courageous man that probably deserved a book, was certainly long enough, and I just went from there with it. Okay. It's been a very interesting story, and it's especially appropriate for journalists.
Okay, well, tell me about why it's appropriate for journalists. That tells us about the background of this story.
Yes, of course, Millett was a journalist, and that was what he viewed himself as being first and foremost. He was the editor of the Canton Daily News, and his murder was the result of his crusade to clean up Canton during Prohibition. He led an editorial crusade, the kind of which you don't see in today's world, a newspaper editorial campaign. And a lot of journalists have studied it as a way of looking at his methods and how he succeeded and didn't succeed and so forth. And, of course, he was awarded the Pulitzer Prize posthumously for his work. So it's a big deal as far as journalists are concerned. He is still, his name is still revered at his alma mater at Indiana University. There was, for a number of years after his death, like 30 or 40 years, a lecture series under his name for journalists. He is a member of the Ohio and Indiana Journalism Halls of Fame. So it's sad that his memory has sort of deteriorated to the point where nobody really knows who he is, because he is quite a remarkable journalist, and he certainly paid the ultimate price for trying to do what journalists aspire to do.
How did you go about doing the background? You said you did research for the book. What's the best way to research on 1926 murder?
Well, you start with the newspaper. You start with microfilm, microfilm readers and a good library, and you just sit down and you start reading. In this case, there were also three graduate studies done by journalism students of Millett's work in Canton, and those were a big help as well. But there is no substitute for just sitting down, going through the papers, and then, of course, you take off on your various leads that you pick up in the papers. You go to census data and so forth to follow up on people and events and so on. But the real legwork starts with reading the newspapers at the time.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about how does Canton regard him these days? Is there anything that commemorates him in Canton, since this is where this all took place?
After his murder, Canton couldn't forget him quick enough. Don Millett's murder was bad for business in Canton, as you might imagine. Canton got terrible publicity. This story was on the front page of the New York Times for months, and this didn't help business in Canton, and so he was not the darling of the Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. They tended to want to see him disappear quickly. And frankly, he did. There were a few things named after him at the time, and that lasted for some years afterwards. But today, you'll see occasionally a business or a place that might have the Millett name out in the area where he was killed on West Tuska. But other than a plaque in the Stark County Historical Society, which is in the McKinley Memorial down in Canton, there really isn't much to commemorate Don Millett. And until recently, he hasn't really gotten a whole lot of interest. Now, I'm hoping that the book will reintroduce Don Millett to a new generation of Cantonians.
Mm-hmm. So, did you do, as a background for you, a lot of true crime reading? Is that something that you read a lot of before you began this story?
Well, I think you can't be a good writer if you aren't a good reader first. I think the best thing you can do is read. And yes, I did read a number of true crime books to get a feel for how the authors arranged things, for get a feel for how they organized their books and so forth. That was part of the preliminary research I did to putting together the book itself. And that's just part, I guess, of the writer's craft. But you really have to get in there and see how other people have done it, especially when you're a first-time author like myself. Now, having gone through the editing and all of the work that's involved in getting a book finally published, I'm a lot easier, I'm a lot farther ahead when I do my next book than I was when I did this one, because there is a definite learning curve.
Okay. What is your next book? What's your...
I'm working on several different true crime areas right now. None of them are at the point where I can really tell you that I have something coming, but true crime is getting... gaining more respect as an area of social history, and it's certainly a fertile territory.
Okay. Who are some of the biggest names that, say, influence you on your writing? Is it Truman Capote, or are there other people that are you'd rather look at?
No, to tell you the truth, I will read and have read just about anything by anybody. I think you have to be, as I said before, you have to be widely read and a good reader to be a good writer, to see how the experts do it and so forth. And so I've read everything, science fiction, nonfiction, fiction, magazine articles, sports. It doesn't matter to me. I don't have a favorite. I just like to see how people do things.
So as a veterinarian, what was the crossover for you into writing this? I mean, veterinarian, there's a specific kind of writing. You know, you're taking notes,
yes,
and everything
right.
like that. How did the, do you ever feel that the veterinarian field has helped you as a writer or created some interesting issues for you as a writer? How does that work?
No, they're actually two different compartments of my life, I guess. They don't really cross over very well. I don't intend to write the next All Creatures Great and Small. I'm not the next James Herriot. That's been done and done better than I could ever do it. I've always been interested in history, and ultimately I consider myself someone who's a storyteller of history. And that's what this book is.
Okay. So what? Tell me a little bit more about the story that, as it unfolded here, to get, say, take us up to the big moment in the book, but don't reveal it so that people are forced to buy
well,
the murder of a journalist.
Well, obviously, you must know by the title he was murdered.
Yeah.
So that kind of
reveals part of it.
That kind of gives it away. But basically, Don Millett came to Canton. He had been a newspaper man in other places. He'd been an editor. He had his own paper. Most of his brothers were in the newspaper business as well, and his father had been in the newspaper business. And Don had not been real successful and considered himself to be a bit of a failure. He got the opportunity to come to Canton. He was hired by James Cox, who owned the Canton Daily News, who you might recall was one of Ohio's governors. He also ran against Harding in the 1920 presidential election. But he lost, and he went back to his newspaper empire, of which he owned several properties. He hired Millett to come into Canton to take over the Canton Daily News, which was the number two newspaper in a two-newspaper town, not the most desirable place to be. Mm-hmm. And so Millett came in and decided that he was going to turn the Daily News around. And at the same time, he became involved in some of the shenanigans that were going on, and it was the Depression. Every place had shenanigans going on. There was lots of, not the Depression, but it was the Roaring Twenties, Prohibition, lots of people doing lots of things they shouldn't have been doing, lots of police forces not doing what they should have done to police, and so he began an editorial campaign to change all that. He stepped on some toes, but remarkably, the people that were higher up in the crime world didn't really, they kind of laughed him off. But some of the lower bootleggers and some of the lower-level police didn't laugh him off, and they're the ones that formed a conspiracy to ultimately resulted in his death, although initially the conspiracy wasn't meant to kill him, just to beat him up and shut him up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell me about, is that the basis for some of the articles that you've written for, like, Timeline, History Magazine, Man-at-Arms? Are those all different articles?
All different.
Okay. And I'm curious about the difference you've got between writing this book and doing those articles, because you've got a lot more invested in the book. How long did it take to research or write the book?
I spent about two and a half years doing the research and the writing of the book. Magazine articles are entirely different. In magazine articles, apparently, from what I understand from the editors, nobody actually reads the articles. They just look at the pictures.
Oh, okay.
So the pictures are extremely important in magazine articles. And you don't have a whole lot of time to develop a story. I mean, there's not a lot of, you know, you got 3,000 or 4,000, 5,000 words or something, you know, and mm-hmm. most of those. Not much time to develop a story. And that's why I wanted to do a book. And I wanted to have a chance to take a story and develop it. And I was extremely lucky, I will be the first to admit that, to have Kent State University Press accept my book and agree to publish it as a first-time author. Extremely lucky.
Why do you say extremely lucky? What is there?
What are the odds of getting, what are the odds of a first-time author getting a book, an unknown first-time author getting a book picked up by a publisher anywhere? Mm-hmm. I'm sure your listeners are more than well aware of the odds of that. pretty long.
Does Kent State, is it specialize in this?
They have a true crime series, yes, and that's why it appealed to them. They also do local history, northeastern Ohio history, which is a rich area for history, but not too many people writing about it.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I would assume, well, there aren't too many people, to be honest, writing Ohio history, if you want to go and make it broader. It's hard to get the major publishing houses interested in those kinds of things. And I think if you're a writer who's trying to make a living at it, this isn't the way to go. It's mostly people like myself who fit into certain niches and do it as a hobby or just as an interest that tend to do this. And so there just aren't many people investigating that area.
Okay. Is there advice then that you can give to people who do want to start out in writing this or in writing the magazine articles? You said you've come a long way since you first started. What are the things that you've really internalized and learned from this?
Well, I think any of these nonfiction history type things that I've written require good research to begin with. You've got to make sure that you have your facts straight, that you have done good research, have it all correct. Then you have to be at least a competent enough writer to put it together in a readable format. And that certainly doesn't always come out of even reading newspapers and that sort of thing. And from there, you just have to really work at getting someone interested in publishing something. And I would certainly advise starting out small, but they also say you should write about what you know. So if you know something about local history or whatever, if there's something you're passionate about, that comes through, and that's the place to start also, a place to look for something to write about.
Okay. And curious, and for the last sort of question, how did you get it attached to Kent State Press? Did you send something into their slush pile, or did you...
Well, I sent a proposal, and I wrote together a proposal. I sent it to 6 publishers that I thought might be interested. I did this after I completed the rough draft. I figured from what I read, well, this is going to take 6, 8 months, a year before I hear anything, so I'll have time to work on polishing up my rough draft. So I sent it into Kent, and 10 days later, they wanted to see my rough draft, which was in no condition at that point to have an editor look at it. So I had to stall for a few weeks while I polished it up and got it ready to go. But I never thought that I was going to hear back from them in less than 2 weeks. That was remarkable.
Do you tell that story at gatherings of authors just to drive people crazy?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think it really helps to drive people crazy. You know? And I guess what I really want to say is, you know, it is possible. Mm-hmm. It is possible that, you know, it can happen. I had always read that it didn't happen, you know, forget it, it's not going to, you'd be lucky to find a publisher and all this stuff, but it can happen.
Okay. Well, Dr. Tom Crowell, I want to thank you for coming on to talk to us today on Writer's Talk. And this is Doug Dangler from The Ohio State University saying, keep writing.